I want to start today with a question that sounds simple, but if you actually sit with it for a minute, it might just break your brain a little.
Oh, I like those.
We usually walk around with this default assumption that what we see with our eyes, you know, trees, cars, the person across from us, that this is the world.
Right. What you see is what you get.
We think we're seeing reality exactly as it is, but what if the world and reality are actually two completely different things?
It is the ultimate disorienting thought, isn't it? But it's the central premise of the material we're diving into today.
Yeah.
We're looking at the work of H.C.J. Stulting and specifically his theory of the holoscript.
And before anyone tunes out thinking this is going to be some, you know, dry, abstract philosophy lecture, stick
No.
around. Because this theory explains everything from why you can't think your way out of anxiety to why our economic systems seem to be destroying the planet, to the tragic story of a rooster named Matthias.
Matthias is key. Honestly, that rooster is probably the most important philosopher we will discuss today.
Exactly. We are going to unpack why logic, the thing we prize so highly, is often a trap. We're going to talk about Darwin's dragons, which is just the coolest term I've heard in a long, long time.
It really is.
And ultimately, we're going to look at how we construct our own prison of perception. So let's start at the very beginning, the distinction between the world and reality.
Right. Most of us use those words, you know, interchangeably, but Stulting draws a hard line between them. And to get it, you have to visualize his core metaphor, the passenger in the train.
I found this image so helpful. So yeah, paint the picture for us.
Okay, so imagine a passenger sitting in a train, and this isn't just a commute. This passenger was born on the train, and well, they'll die on the train. They can never get off.
Never. Stuck for life.
For life.
Yeah.
And the train is moving through the countryside, and every so often it passes a railroad crossing.
Okay. So the passenger looks out the window as they pass. What do they see?
Well, naturally, because the train is passing, the crossing bars are down.
Right, to stop the cars.
To stop cars from hitting the train. But here's the catch. Because the passenger is always on the train, every single time they see a crossing, without exception, the bars are closed.
So in their entire life experience, a railroad crossing is just a set of closed bars.
That's all it can be. They've never seen an open bar. It's not just rare, it's physically impossible from their vantage point.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Exactly. So the passenger develops a theory of the universe. They conclude that railroad crossings are objects that are permanently closed. That becomes their world.
But we, standing outside the train, we know the bars are actually open most of the time.
Precisely. They only close when the train approaches. The open bars are the reality. The closed bars are the world as seen by the passenger.
So Stulting's point is that we are that passenger.
We are. We're trapped inside this moving perspective. Our consciousness, our sensory limits, our culture, our language. That's the train.
The train is the human condition.
Yes. The train is the whole mechanism. When we look out at the universe, we aren't seeing it raw. We're seeing how it reacts to us, or we're seeing it through the filter of our biology.
Yeah.
We only see the closed bars.
The open bars, the reality that exists when we aren't looking. That's totally invisible to us.
Completely. And this connects directly to that concept you mentioned, the holoscript.
Right.
That's the term for the system inside the train. It's the total cognitive framework we live in. It's not just your personal thoughts. It's the grid of logic and language that we've all built over thousands of years to, you know, navigate life.
The reading brought up Alan Watts here, specifically his analogy of the ink blot. I think that really clarifies what the holoscript actually does.
Oh, it's a classic Watts idea, and it fits perfectly. So imagine reality, capital R reality, as a spilled ink blot
Okay.
or flowing water. It's fluid, it's wiggly, it has no hard edges, it just is.
But humans can't really handle the wiggles. We need to survive. We need to know where the food is and where the cliff edge is.
Exactly. If you just stared at the wiggly ink blot of the universe, you'd be paralyzed. So what we do is we overlay a grid on top of it.
Lines of latitude and longitude.
We impose coordinates. We cut the ink blot into boxes and we label them tree, mountain, good, bad.
And that grid is the holoscript.
That grid is the holoscript. It creates the world out of reality. And the problem isn't that we have a grid. I mean, we need it. The problem is that we confuse the grid with the ink blot.
We look at a map of the coastline and think the black line on the paper is the actual coast.
Exactly. We mistake our symbols for the things they represent. We think Monday is a real thing that exists in nature instead of just a grid line we drew on time. We are the passenger who is absolutely certain that crossing bars are solid, immovable walls.
It makes you wonder if this system, this holoscript, is so limiting,
yeah,
who built it? Was there, like, a designer?
That's the fascinating part. Stolting argues, drawing on evolutionary theory and physics, that no, there's no designer. It isn't a conspiracy. It's just blind mechanics.
This brings us to that acronym that's really the engine of the whole theory, PSE.
PSE. The principle of systematic exclusion. It sounds technical, but it's actually pretty intuitive. Think about the Big Bang. In the beginning, there's just pure, undifferentiated energy.
A big soup.
A soup. Now, for something to become a specific thing, say a quark or a proton, it has to not be something else.
Right. To be up implies you are not down. To be a cat means you're not a dog.
Exactly. Definition requires exclusion. You define a system by what you leave out. And this principle of systematic exclusion, it starts in physics, but it drives biology too. Evolution is just PSE in action.
Because nature is constantly trying things out.
Constantly. A billion variations, a billion mutations. And most of them, they don't work. They fail.
So they get excluded. They die out.
They're deleted. And this is crucial. Nature has no memory of the failures. If a genetic mutation leads to an organism that can't survive, poof, it's gone.
The error is just wiped from the record.
It's ruthlessly efficient. It only keeps what works.
So nature is this perfect editor. It just deletes the bad sentences. But humans, we're different. Mm-hmm. We don't just delete things.
And that is where all the trouble begins. That's where we leave this Garden of Eden of direct experience and enter what he calls the misery.
Why?
Because humans have something nature doesn't really rely on, symbolic memory.
We remember the errors.
We remember everything, and we encode it into symbols. This brings us to a really important distinction in Stolting's work, level N versus level N1.
I want to spend a minute here because this feels like the technical heart of the theory. What exactly is level N1?
Level N1 is the raw reality. It's the ink blot. It's your direct physical sensation. Hunger is level N1. The feeling of rain on your skin is N1.
The ecological ground floor, basically.
That's a great way to put it. The ground floor where biology happens.
Okay. And level N?
Level N is the layer of symbols, words, and logic we put on top of it. It's the grid. The word hunger, that's level N. I should probably order a pizza. That's a level N strategy. The problem is because we have memory, we store level N symbols that used to work or that we think should work, and we just keep them forever.
So while nature deletes the failed experiment immediately, we hoard all our old strategies in our heads.
We create a mess, a total mess in our minds. We hold on to beliefs or rules that might have been useful in one specific context 10 years ago, and we just blindly apply them to right now, where they don't fit at all.
We stop engaging with the reality in front of us.
Yes, the N1.
And start living entirely in our symbolic world, the level N.
We are navigating by an old map that doesn't match the territory anymore. And this leads to what Stolting calls subversion by logic. We start to trust the logic more than the reality.
This feels like the perfect moment to bring in the rooster.
Ah, yes.
Because this is exactly and tragically what happened to Matthias.
The parable of Matthias the rooster. It comes from a story by Anton Kuhlhaas, and it is a perfect illustration of how logic can get you killed.
So set the scene for us. Who is Matthias?
Matthias is a rooster. He's got a routine. Every day he goes out to this country road and he sits in a pothole to enjoy the sun. He likes the warmth.
Okay.
But every single day around 4:00 p.m., a milk truck comes barreling down that same road.
Now, in the beginning, Matthias is living in level N1, just direct experience.
Totally. Yeah. He feels the ground vibrate. He hears the roar of the engine. His biological reflex kicks in adrenaline, fear, and he jumps out of the way.
The truck passes, he survives. A successful strategy.
It works.
Yeah.
But then Matthias evolves. He starts thinking. He moves up to level N.
He becomes a philosopher.
He does. He sits in his pothole and he looks back at his data. He analyzes his history. He thinks, you know, every single time I sit here and that truck comes and I jump, nothing bad happens to me. I've never been hit.
Uh-oh. I can see where this is going. He confuses the result, which is survival, with the condition, which is safety.
He constructs a perfect logical deduction. He says, my experience proves that this situation is safe. Therefore, there is no danger. He creates a theory. The truck is not a threat.
And because he's a rational rooster, he trusts his theory over everything else.
The next day, the truck comes. Matthias hears the rumble. He feels the vibration. But his new logical insight overrides his instinct. He tells himself, logic dictates that I am safe. So he stays seated.
Splat.
Splat. Matthias is crushed.
It's funny in a really dark way, but it's actually terrifying. Because his logic was internally consistent. Based on his data, he wasn't being stupid. Mm-hmm. He was being perfectly logical.
That is the horror of it. His logic was perfect within his internal system, within his holoscript, but it was ecologically fatal. He committed what Stolten calls a transgression of levels.
He took a symbolic conclusion.
There is no danger.
And tried to force it onto a physical reality, a 2-ton moving truck. He thought the map could stop the truck.
And Stolting's whole point is this isn't just a story about a bird. This is the fundamental human condition. We're constantly building these logical models that tell us it's safe, or this is how the world works, and we ignore the rumble of the truck because our theory says the truck isn't a threat.
So if Matthias represents us,
yeah.
What are the potholes we are sitting in? How does this transgression of levels show up in our actual lives?
Well, Stolting calls this the hierarchy of misery. It happens whenever a higher, more symbolic level tries to dictate terms to a lower, more natural level.
Okay, let's make this concrete. Give me an example from just daily life.
The most relatable one is probably psychology and how we deal with emotions. So imagine you feel fear or anxiety. That's level N1. It's a biological event.
Adrenaline, cortisol, heart rate.
Real physical data.
Yeah.
But then our brain kicks in, level N, our logic, our social conditioning, and we tell ourselves, I shouldn't be afraid. It's irrational to be afraid of this meeting. I command myself to stop feeling fear.
Just think positive, or don't be a baby.
Exactly. You are trying to use a symbol language, logic, to control a biological reality. Hormones. It's a category error. It's like trying to put out a fire by yelling the word water at it. It just doesn't work.
And when it doesn't work, we get even more stressed out.
We get repression, internal conflict, shame. We sit in the pothole of I am fine while the truck of anxiety runs us over and over. We're letting the grid try to suppress the ink blot.
That makes so much sense. We do that constantly. What about on a bigger scale, like societally?
It's even more obvious there. Think about the economy. The economy is the ultimate level N+1 system. I mean, it is a massive symbolic construct. Money, interest rates, GDP.
These aren't physical things.
No.
Yeah.
You can't eat a dollar bill. You can't live inside a stock option.
It's just a game we invented to manage resources.
Right. But look at how we treat it. We let this symbolic system dictate to the lower levels, ecology and humanity. We look at an ecosystem, a forest, which is a complex living N1 reality. And the economic logic says the value of this forest is zero unless we cut it down for timber.
Or we look at human beings who have biological limits and needs for rest, and the market logic says, to be valuable, you must work 80 hours a week to be efficient.
And that is the transgression. We have the abstract map, economics, destroying the actual territory, which is ecology and humanity. We say, the market requires this, as if the market is a god or a law of physics.
That is Matthias saying, my logic requires me to stay seated.
And the result is burnout, ecological collapse, and, well, misery. We are sacrificing the real world to sustain our symbolic illusions. We're eating the menu instead of the meal.
It's wild because we act like we have no choice. We feel trapped in the logic of the system.
And that feeling of entrapment, that blindness to other possibilities, that brings us to the most poetic and maybe the most important concept in all this. Darwin's dragons.
I love this name, Darwin's dragons. It sounds like a fantasy novel. What are the dragons?
Remember PSE. The principle of systematic exclusion.
To be something, you have to exclude everything else.
Darwin's dragons are the things that were excluded.
Okay. So in evolution, these would be the species that didn't make it. The evolutionary dead ends.
Yes. The billions of potential life forms that never evolved or that died out, they are the negative space of evolution. But within the holoscript, within our minds, the dragons are the thoughts we cannot think. They're the truths that our system makes invisible.
Going back to the train metaphor.
Yeah.
These are the open railroad crossings.
Precisely. They are the open crossings the passenger never sees. And just because our system, our logic, our culture excludes them, it doesn't mean they aren't real. They exist in the ink blot, but they just don't show up on our grid.
So a dragon could be a way of experiencing time that isn't linear, or a way of relating to nature that isn't about ownership.
Yes. Or a subjective experience that science calls anecdotal and just ignores because it can't be measured. Science, by definition, has a grid. It only accepts things that are reproducible. Anything that falls outside that grid, a unique spiritual experience, a feeling that defies language, is a dragon. The system says that doesn't exist, but the person experiencing it knows it does.
And ignoring the dragon seems incredibly dangerous. Because if reality is the ink blot and we only look at the grid, we're missing most of the picture.
We're missing the context, and forgetting context is what kills Matthias. He forgot the context of why he was safe because he jumped. We forget the context of why we have an economy to serve human needs. When you lose the dragons, the alternatives, you become rigid. You get stuck in the pothole.
So, this is heavy stuff. We are trapped in a train, we are blinding ourselves with our own logic, and we're ignoring dragons. How do we live with this? Stolting talks about a solution, but it's not about fixing the system, is it?
No, because you can't jump off the train. That's the hard truth. You can't just strip away your human consciousness and perceive raw reality like a rock. We were stuck with the holoscript. We need language. We need logic. The solution is in how we relate to it.
He makes a distinction here between false science and true science, or true art.
Right. False science, or you could just say dogmatic thinking, is the belief that the model is the reality. It's the belief that if it's not on the grid, it doesn't exist. It's Matthias believing his theory is invincible.
And true science.
True science and true art uses the holoscript as a ladder. This is a reference to the philosopher Wittgenstein. He said his philosophy was like a ladder. You use it to climb up, but once you're there, you have to throw the ladder away.
Meaning you use the model to get somewhere, but you don't worship the model. You recognize it's just a tool.
Exactly. You acknowledge the grid. You say, this is a useful map, but it is not the territory. And true art is particularly good at this. Think of the surrealist painter Magritte. He paints a pipe and writes underneath it, this is not a pipe.
Which is true. It's a painting of a pipe.
It creates a paradox. It forces your brain to glitch. It shows you the bars of the cage. Artists like Escher or Bach, they play with these loops and paradoxes to hint at the dragons, to hint at the stuff that logic can't capture. They remind us that the mystery is bigger than the math.
So, practically speaking, for someone listening to this deep dive right now, how do we apply this? How do we avoid being Matthias?
Stolting offers a few sort of ethical imperatives. The first one is, don't fill in for others.
Don't fill in. What does that mean?
It means since we know that our holoscript is just a construct, our limited perspective, we have to realize that we can never truly know the reality of another person. When I say, I know exactly how you feel, or you should just do X, I'm projecting my grid onto your ink blot. That is a transgression.
It's arrogant. It's assuming my closed bars are the same as your closed bars.
Exactly. We have to respect the mystery of the other. The second practical tip is learn to forget.
That sounds really counterintuitive.
It does, but remember, our problem is that we hoard old strategies. We keep applying old logic to new contexts. Learning to forget means actively pruning your mental garden, asking yourself, does this belief still serve reality? Or is it just a habit?
Letting the useless stuff go.
Right. And finally, respect context. Keep the levels distinct. Use logic for building a bridge, but don't use logic to cure a broken heart. Use economics for trade, but don't use economics to determine the value of a species. Don't let the symbols rule the reality.
At the end of the day, it's about humility, isn't it? Knowing that we're seeing a simulation of our own making.
Ultimate humility. We are the passenger. We can build amazing theories about the inside of the train, but we must never forget there is a world of open crossings out there that we will never fully grasp. And that's okay. The danger isn't the train. The danger is thinking the train is the whole universe.
Well, let's unpack this one last time. We are writing the holoscript. It is useful. It is necessary, but it is not the world. We have to watch out for Matthias's trap. Don't think yourself into a pothole.
And we need to keep an eye out for the dragons.
And accept that certainty is usually a warning sign.
Yeah. If you are 100% sure the truck isn't coming, you might want to look again.
So here's the provocative thought we want to leave you with today. We talked about Darwin's dragons, the things excluded by your system. So what dragon is your current worldview excluding right now? What is the thing you cannot see? Simply because your logic says it shouldn't be there.
Is it a feeling? A perspective from someone you disagree with? A connection to nature? What is hiding in the negative space of your life?
Go find your dragon. Just don't sit in the pothole while you look for it. Thanks for diving in with us.
Safe travels.